This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Oh, how I have missed that music. We are back.
Me too.
With the Watford Fan Show. Myself, Matt Beadle, here through to 8pm with Andy Lewis from the Hornet's Nest. How are you, Andy?
I'm very well. I think I'm ready now. I'm ready for football to start. Yeah, I've had a wonderful summer, a wonderful off-season, but I'm ready now.
You need the break, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. It's like towards because obviously our season was extended by a week thanks to the FA Cup final. And it does take it out, you know. It's a long season, 10 months, and to have that 2 month break in the middle between it all, it was really, really relaxing. I don't think the cricket quite helped the nerves and the tension that caused me for those two, three weeks, but no, I've really enjoyed it, but ready now for the season to restart.
You're right as well. A season does take it out of you, especially when it's extended by an extra week, and especially when it ends in the way that it did. We don't want to start on a low, but I mean, was that tough to deal with? Did you do a show after the FA Cup final?
Yeah, we did. We did it a week after. I think was it a week after? I think it must have been. I think we had a bit of a delay between the final and having the final show of the season. But what was frustrating was the week leading up to that was so good, and it was just filled with so much pride and optimism for everything that I was just reading on Twitter and Facebook. People sharing stories of, you know, when they went to the FA Cup final, their dad took them in 1984, and now they're taking their sons in 2019. Stories like that whole week, the build-up was just incredible, and for it to have ended in the defeat, or the manner of the defeat that it did, was a little bit deflating. But I think what Watford fans took from it, you know, the whole community aspect, and the Watford fans sort of came together with the waving of the flags when we were 5-0 down. My family and I didn't even see the sixth goal go in because everyone's flags were just in the way. So technically it was 5-0. Didn't see the goal, didn't count. That's my rule. But it was, yeah, a really disappointing afternoon, but a real sense of pride in our club.
Absolutely. And if you could lose to anyone 6-0, Manchester City is probably the best team. Not that it's good to lose against any team, yeah, but if you're going to lose someone, Man City probably is fair enough. Yeah. Now, just quickly, we started this show with Zed Cars, as we always do. But there's a story behind this, because Jake Watson came in one day when I was doing the Fans Forum, which is the show before this, a few months back before the FA Cup final, and said that this big poll was going out on Twitter about the fact that Watford were going to come into a new song at Wembley because it meant that they'd be able to drum up more of an atmosphere. What happened?
So we, because obviously we played games at Wembley previously, and it all started from the 2013 playoff semi-final, where Palace played Glad All Over to get their fans going, and that sounded incredible. And Watford fans didn't really have anything. I think we must have played Sandstorm before the game, which, you know, you can't get an atmosphere going to. And so for the semi-final this year, it was decided, because Wolves have Hi Ho Wolverhampton to sing before the game, and Roy Moore, the creator of the Watford supporters singing group, put out a tweet saying, you know, what Elton John song should Watford fans sing as an anthem before their FA Cup semi-final? So the poll went out, four songs were voted, and then those four songs got sent off to Elton John himself, and Elton John decided, I'm still standing, fair enough. So came to FA Cup semi-final day, and we didn't actually play it before the game. So we were like, oh, kind of, you know, maybe it was just played over a loudspeaker and just a thing wasn't made of it. But then for the final sort of three, four home games of the season, it was announced that Zed Cars, the theme tune that we just heard, which we've been using as our walk-on music since the 1960s, I think, was going to be replaced by I'm Still Standing. Now, if you know your stuff, you know that when Zed Cars was introduced, I forget the manager's name at the time, it was introduced purely because it was his favourite show. And Watford then went on, I think, a 29 unbeaten run at home, which is why the song stayed, because it was just became superstition. We haven't lost since Zed Cars came on, blah, blah, blah. We haven't won at home, excluding yesterday, because that was a friendly. We haven't won a competitive game at home since Zedcars was taken away. So there's still this whole, you know, how superstitious football fans can be, myself included. If we don't win against Brighton next weekend, it is going to come back to Zedcars. It's not going to be nothing to do with formation, nothing to do with we haven't signed enough players in the window. It's all going to be to do with bring back Zedcars. So that's the whole story behind Zedcars and I'm still standing.
Wow.
There you go.
There we go.
Very petty.
Well, it's bizarre because Zedcars has just always been the way that it is. And it doesn't fail to drum up an atmosphere before games at Vicarage Road, right?
No, not at all. And what I dislike about I'm Still Standing, I love the song. And obviously, you know, Elton John's been a huge part of the club throughout our history. But what irritates me with I'm Still Standing is when the players come out, is everyone starts clapping in rhythm rather than just general applause for the team's coming. And it doesn't sound right at the start of a game. I can't explain it, and I don't know why. But everyone's just, it happened yesterday, the Real Sociedad game. The fans are just sort of clapping like they're at a concert almost, and it just doesn't feel Watford to me. It doesn't feel like match day at the moment. Give it, you know, a whole season, my opinion may change, but it'll take a bit of time. And I think the club is sticking with it, so whatever I say on this show is going to have zero impact on getting it changed back, but just got to suck it up, I guess.
Interesting. What's this space? Well, if a campaign does start, I would imagine the club probably would listen to the fans, because that's quite a key thing. I'd love to know if it makes a difference to players. I know players talk about the atmosphere in the ground, but if players have a preference as to what music they walk out to, do you think that they factor that in?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because players will always, they'll always try and keep it the same each week. You know, the any professional athlete will have a song that they listen to get themselves motivated for any sort of physical activity they're about to do. And when that suddenly changes, when that, you know, the normality of it all suddenly changes, maybe they're not quite in the right mindset. That can possibly have a psychological impact. Very, very difficult to sort of quantify and put any sort of statistics behind it. The only way we're going to know is if we get Troy Deeney sitting in here saying, you know, Troy, what do you prefer, I'm Still Standing or Zedcars? And he's probably going to say, well, he doesn't really care. But it is a valid point, I think. It would be really, really interesting to know, because something is different about the pre-match walking onto the pitch, and that can possibly mentally get a player not in the right mindset.
Absolutely. Well, what for fans, if you're listening, what do you prefer? Get in touch, 0208 7020 558, or on the socials, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. You can also WhatsApp us on that line as well now, 0208 7020 558. Now, Andy, you mentioned the fact that you're ready for football now. You could have been ready a couple of weeks ago, because, of course, Wolves started their qualifying rounds in the Europa League. They beat Crusaders. They now go to Armenian side, FC Punic. How do you feel about this? I mean, this was a potential opportunity for Watford in Europe this season.
If I'm being honest, I am very jealous, because the thought of a Thursday night in Armenia is right up there with one of the things that I want to experience as a football fan. I would have found it hilarious if Wolves had gone out to Crusaders and have not left the UK for their European tour. That would have been hysterical, but sadly, you know, they are a very, very good side, and they deserve to finish seventh last year. I do think that if Watford were going to qualify for Europe, or are going to qualify for Europe, it had to be last season. I think last season was possibly our best chance, and we'll probably touch on sort of transfers later and how I think the season's going to shape up in terms of the table. But I am very jealous. But their first game is what, the 25th of July? It does feel odd to have like a competitive European fixture in that sort of, well, at the end of July, not before August. It would feel very almost like a friendly, I guess, because they were expected to beat Crusaders, because they go in at such an early stage. It does have that sort of friendly feel about it.
I think you're bang on. And in terms of the hardcore, I think the hardcore are ready for football at any stage throughout the year. But in terms of your wider fan base, absolutely not ready to come back at the end of July. We used to see back in the day when West Ham competed in the Intertoto, and it was like early to mid-July that these competitive games were taking place. It just wasn't right. And we saw as well, to be fair, with Burnley last season, who went through three qualifiers and still didn't make the Europa League, and that massively impacted upon their start to the season. Only really turned around pretty much, I think, on the 20th game when Tom Heaton came back in goal, that they managed to turn it around for them. So it does show that while it's great to be in the Europa League, when you finish seventh, it's a much harder task than when you finish further up the table and just go straight into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Wolves are in a better place financially. I don't think they're going to do a Burnley, because we profited from that, because our second game of last season was away at Burnley, and that was on a Sunday. Burnley had just played one of their qualifiers on the Thursday beforehand, and Burnley looked really slow, really off the pace, and you didn't expect to see that from a Sean Dyche side. Now, Wolves, I think, are in a completely different scenario to Burnley, and I think they've got the money, they've got the backing, they've got the squad. I don't think Wolves are going to see that sort of dip in form at the start of the season. They're a very good side. So it's going to be really difficult for Watford to be able to challenge for that seventh spot again, with the likes of Leicester and Everton and Wolves and West Ham as well, strengthening throughout the summer. So it's almost like the Premier League's going to sort of split into sort of three mini leagues. It's going to be, I think, the top three in City, Liverpool and Spurs. Then it's going to be sort of like the middle eight or nine clubs. Mm-hmm. I'm throwing Arsenal, Chelsea and United in there as well, alongside ourselves, Wolves, Leicester, Everton, etc. And then sort of the bottom six, all propping up the table and fighting to stay in the division. So it's going to be a tough one.
You said that last season was your best season in recent times, I'm presuming. Not your best ever season.
Not our best ever season. Highest ever total, highest Premier League points total ever, but not highest top flight finish.
Okay, so my question to you now is, can it be topped? And again, I don't want to start on a low point here. I feel like we're saying that the terror of the FA Cup final was low, and we had such a great season last season that can we top it? But it's going to be quite a tough task.
It's going to be really, really difficult. I think we can top it, and I think the way we can do that is by finishing in the top half of the table, because end of last season, where West Ham beat us 4-1, I don't think we'd been out of the top half of the table for probably a good 80% of the season. And on the final day, just slipping down into 11th really put a dampener on what had been a fantastic campaign. I would be really, really happy to have that sort of top half finish to reflect how we've improved as a club. Because, yeah, we did get our highest points total, but when you don't see it sort of reflected in the table placings, you still feel a little bit off the pace. And that wasn't the case. You know, we were in the race for Europe until the last sort of three or four games. So it's going to be really, really difficult. I think fans are going to accept that the FA Cup final probably might not happen again this season. Would absolutely love it if we went one step further and won our first bit of silverware. But going to be really, really difficult. But I'd be very, very happy with that top half finish. But I think it's important for fans this season to, because last season was so good, to not get not set the bar or expectations too high, and just sort of be a bit more realistic about how this season's going to go.
And just before we go to our first set of ads, I want to ask you about the kit, because quite a striking halved kit from Watford this season. And your opinion on a whole regarding kits, because it's been since 2003 now that Watford have had a kit every season, or 2005, I should say. They had that last kit for two seasons between them. But then every season, as we see with Premier League sides now, and actually clubs throughout the Football League, it's a new kit every season. Personally, I don't like it. I like to think that kits have a bit of a period of time, because you remember certain games, certain moments, but they're so quick to come and go now. A, do you like the kit? And B, do you wish that kit stayed around for longer?
So A, do I like the kit? I'm not sold on it just yet. I have the very unpopular opinion that I don't like the colour red in Watford's, I guess, palette.
Which has been used, I mean, for a hell of a long time, just purely sometimes through the sponsor, right?
Yeah. So we originally played in black and yellow throughout the 60s, and then sort of at the start of Elton John's ownership and GT's management, we added a bit of red, and we've had it ever since, I think. But I know I'm one of very, very few Watford fans, and I'll hold my hands up to it, but I don't like it. I think if we're the Hornets, we should be black and yellow, and there'll be some people who come at me and say, no, you're wrong, we should have red. I accept that I'm in the minority on that one. Do I like the kit? I think it's a bit dull, if I'm being totally honest. And what I dislike is that, you know, club reveals their kit on social media, and someone 5 minutes later finds the template on Adidas's website. And all they've done is they've whacked a badge and a sponsor on and chucked another 40 quid onto the asking price. That's what bothers me. I don't mind the fact that we change it every year. With Watford, I like that we can sort of change our design each year. You know, we've had vertical stripes, we've had horizontal stripes through the last sort of five seasons. I like the fact we can change our design and just switch it up a bit. What I don't like is that we can pick out another club. Like our away kit, for example, is Cardiff's home kit. that's what I don't like. I like to be unique. And I think we have sort of the template in order to do that. We're not a Southampton of just a striped shirt each season. We can change it. And why not be different?
Absolutely. Lazy football design, football kit design for manufacturers that we see nowadays. Just the same old kit streamed out to so many different clubs. Just a change of the badge, a change of the colour. It is not on. But someone who is not lazy by any means whatsoever is Hilda Halsey, former supporter of the season. We're going to be talking to her right next.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
Hilda Halsey, former supporter of the season at Watford, who's on the line now to discuss pre-season and hopes for the season ahead. How are you, Hilda?
I'm very well. Hope you guys are well. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Hilda.
Lovely to have you on the line, Hilda. Just quickly, that Zedcars, I'm still standing debate, what side do you stand on?
I'm going to be controversial. Oh. I don't agree with Andy.
Oh, there we go.
Hilda, cut her off.
Well, Andy was talking about the shirt and saying, you know, he wants something a bit unique. Well, I'd like a song that was unique. I don't like sharing, and I certainly don't like sharing with Everton. So from my point of view, I'm not sure I'm still standing the right song, but I'm okay with it being different, and I'm okay with it being something Celtic. So, but at the moment, the stats do speak for not having a change, so...
That's fair.
I'm a football fan, so I'm superstitious.
I'll accept that. That's a very good justification. But you know me, Hilda, and all mine and my family's superstitions throughout football to a lucky halftime chocolate and a 55th minute polo. I've got a side on superstition for this one, I'm afraid.
What I do wonder is you talked about the players coming out. You know, I work. Doing the roadie role on match days, and for me it's very confusing now because I'm used to hearing that and knowing that's my cue to go in, and I can't get used to having a different song. So I wonder, you said about the players, I wonder if from a point of view of changing their gear in, you know, their brain into a different mode to hear the song, I don't know. Maybe that's the reason.
So when the players walk out the tunnel 5 minutes late on Saturday, we'll know the reason why.
That's right, like me.
Hilda, we had an excellent win yesterday in our final pre-season game against Real Sociedad. A week before that, victory against QPR and against Bayer Leverkusen, and just one defeat. Not a bad one to lose, I guess, against Champions League semi-finalist Ajax over in Austria. How have you sort of seen pre-season going? You're happy with the way it's gone, or are you more of the opinion that results don't really matter, it's all just about fitness?
I've been a bit indifferent about pre-season this year, if I'm really honest. I don't know why. I was a bit disappointed with the GP game in the choice of opponent. I didn't think it was very exciting. I'd use the word lazy, but I don't want to be rude about my club. But, you know, I mean, obviously, at least we did finally win that trophy, the GT trophy. It is good. But they've not been, from what I can understand, not very exciting, enthralling wins. But it's not about, I mean, as you say, the fitness is the key. There's been quite a lot of squad changes. Let's see what happens on Saturday, you know, and maybe judge from there. Sometimes they say if you have a good pre-season, it's not a good omen. And sometimes they say if you have a bad pre-season, it's a good omen. So who knows?
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Hilda. I don't think there's any theory to that whatsoever. With the bad pre-season, good season, good pre-season, bad season, you just don't know what's going to happen. Teams are ultimately going to be ready when they're ready. But you talked about fitness there. And I think that's the key thing that you've seen come out of Watford this summer, these double sessions that Javi Gracia and the guys have been putting them through. Sometimes you hear players not liking it, being pushed a bit too much. Is there a concern they're going to be slightly overcooked when the season starts?
No, because I think they're all used to it and ready for it. And I think the big advantage we've got this year, we've gone back into this season with the same manager. So there's no surprises with Javi. They've done a pre-season with him. They know what to expect. I mean, we've got a lot of the same squad. Obviously, you know, we've had a few signings, so it'd be interesting to know what those players think. You see them all on Insta and, you know, Twitter and that complaining about how hard work it is. But that's because they've had a month kind of sitting on a beach. It must be hard work getting back into that routine. But it seems to be the key, that fitness. It really does seem to be the key. And it helped us last year. You know, we had a great flying start, and I'm hoping we can kind of match that again.
Yeah,
because it is important, I think, to get those points under your belt at the start. We've got some tough fixtures coming up quite early on. So,
yeah, absolutely. And last season, whenever a player was sort of asked, you know, how have Watford been so good this season, it sort of all came back to that pre-season that they had under Javi, and all just talking about the fitness and how intense the sessions were. And we saw it as well in towards the end of games that Watford, some of these clubs were running out of fuel with 10, 15 minutes to go.
Right.
And Watford were managed to keep going. You mentioned there that we'd only made a couple of signings over the summer. The main one, of course, being Craig Dawson. Centre back in from West Brom. Now, last season, obviously, centre back was a big issue for us, or defence as a whole, really. We were just leaking too many goals. Is Craig Dawson the person that you sort of wanted to see come in? Are you happy with that signing that we've made?
Not happy, not unhappy. I always think you've got to give people a chance. You know, there's a lot of hype around some of these players sometimes, and then you get them, and to me, they don't live up to the hype. So I think the proof of the pudding is, you know, seeing him on the pitch and seeing him gel in the team. Obviously, I'm a little bit disappointed because now my Mariappa is probably second pick, but I get that we need to we need to move with the times. He's got a good relationship with Foster, which is, you know, a good thing in the sense of he's coming in as a stranger, but he's got that kind of relationship at the back, so that potentially could be helpful. Let me watch him a few games and I'll decide. Nice to see an English player. That's a good thing. I mean, I'm quite positive about the fact that we've got an English player. So,
no, absolutely.
That's a positive.
Absolutely, Hilda. And the first time you're probably going to get to see him in competitive action is the opening game against Brighton.
Oh.
Now, I don't want to delve too much into your personal life here, Hilda, but it has been made aware to me that your husband is a Brighton fan.
Yes, I'm married to a seagull. Yes.
So how is that panning out for next week?
Quite a bit of banter. Obviously, we have bragging rights from a few of the home games, but I don't know. They've got a weird, strange start to the season, obviously, with their change of manager. So I think from a husband's point of view, he doesn't really know what to expect. It will be an evenly matched game. I'd like to think we'll take the edge, us being at home. We've got a bet on the loser has got to buy the chips.
Excellent.
So,
right.
So that's the penalty. But I love the fact that we get to play, our own teams. He'll be in the away end. I'll be in the home end. So, and for those 90 minutes, he's not my husband. So... it's good fun. And everybody that knows us kind of, you know, gives him a bit of stick. And, it will actually be working on match day beforehand, greeting all the away fans, which will be quite funny. And then he's got to go and get changed. So,
lovely.
Change for him.
Well, lovely. Well, I hope you have a lovely weekend, Hilda. And, of course, we want Watford to win. And we hope you enjoy the chips as a result. Thank you for joining us, Hilda.
I want the bragging rights. Thank you.
Lovely. Cheers,
Thanks
Hilda.
Thanks very much. Come on, you on.
That was Hilda Halsey, former supporter of the season at Watford. Andy, she mentioned the fact that she liked Craig Dawson being English, a new signing in. A few others that have come in as well. Tom Dele Bashiru, for want of a better pronunciation. He's coming from Man City, the under-23 squad there, and is looking forward to it. The interesting thing I read about his quotes was that he's expecting to get game time. He wants game time. Of course, he's got Etienne Capoue and Abdoulou Doucouré, who's been the subject of a bid from Everton, we hear today as well. Do you think he's going to get those minutes?
I'm not sure in terms of the league. I think certainly for the League Cup, it wouldn't surprise me if him and Domingos Quina start in the middle, because obviously Doucouré and Capoue are our starting central midfielders. And then I think actually waiting in the wings to come in next, it isn't Tom Cleverley, it isn't Nathaniel Chalobert. I think it is Domingos Quina. Again, bought him for £1 million from West Ham at the start of last season. He impressed whenever he came on the pitch last season, maybe sort of five or six appearances. Won our young player of the season last time out. And in pre-season, certainly against QPR last weekend, whenever he's on the ball, something, you know, something's going to happen. He's a little live wire. He's electric in midfield. And he makes the Watford side better. He scored a couple of excellent goals as well. A screamer against Reading, excellent finish against Cardiff last season. And to know that Tom has joined from Man City, a club that, you know, doesn't necessarily give a lot of time to a lot of youngsters, Phil Foden being the exception. Watford's now starting to look like a club where young players can come, get the game time they need to sort of further their career. And yeah, a lot of them will hopefully move on to better clubs. I say better clubs. I was going to give Richarlison as the perfect example. I'm not saying Everton are a better club because it's the Watford fan show and I don't like Everton. but Richarlison's sort of the perfect example of the Pozzo model. You come in for a small fee, you get game time at Watford if you're good enough, and then you move on for a huge profit. And that's probably going to be the case with Keane. I think Tom's looked at Richarlison and said, you know, I want to play in the Premier League. I think Watford's a good starting point for that. And we've got, you know, Adalberto Penaranda as well, I think 19 years old. Don't quote me on that. From Venezuelan international. But also arguably the signing of the season hasn't arrived yet. João Pedro from Fluminense, the same club as Richarlison. Will be joining when he turns 18 in January for the January transfer window. And if his form back in his native Brazil is anything to go by, he'll be setting the Premier League alight for the second half of the season, because some of the goals that this boy, he is a boy, technically has scored, have been sensational. And hopefully, you know, we're in a good position come January for João to come in. So the youth, whilst we've only signed one sort of permanent starter, the youth's aspect of Watford's transfer window is looking pretty good.
Absolutely, yeah. January 2020, the hope. A deal has been agreed in principle with João Pedro, hasn't it? So you like to think nothing happens between now and then. I know Liverpool was sort of rearing their head towards him, but a move to Watford, just like that move you mentioned with Richarlison, will hopefully be done in 2020. And it is good to see that Gracia is pointing towards youth. It seems like the future's bright at Watford. Another name that has come up is Ismaïl Assar, the 21-year-old winger from Rennes. He was obviously playing in the African Nations Cup this summer with Senegal. Now, it looks like this one has almost crossed the line. It's going to be in excess of £30 million, a record fee for a player at Watford. Now, a winger, we don't expect them to score goals, but often now with the new age winger, they do get goals, they do get assists. He's played nearly 100 games for Metz and Rennes. Not prolific by any means, but assists have been okay.
Yeah, he sounds promising, and I think what Javi likes in the way that he sets up the team is that we set up in a 4-4-2, but almost when we're attacking, it becomes a 4-2-2-2. Let's use yesterday for example, Hughes and Semmer, whenever they're on the ball, cutting inside. And if you saw the highlights of our equaliser, it came from an excellent run from Will Hughes, picking the ball up on the right, coming inside and then laying the ball off to Gray to score. That's how Javi likes to set up his team. So don't be surprised if this guy comes in, starts on the wing, and then Javi tells him to come inside, and hopefully he'll add to his already impressive assist tally and add to his goal tally as well. I don't know too much about him. Ahom Ansah, he's coming from the same club that we got Abdoulaye Doucouré from. So there must be something about him. But this is how the Pozzo model works. We find players who are relatively unknown, give them game time, and hopefully sell them on for a big fee, like we've seen with Dodi Lukebakio as well, who's just gone to Hertha Berlin for about £20 million. And he played 15 minutes for Watford, spent last season all on loan with Fortuna Dusseldorf, scored a hat-trick against Bayern Munich, which always helps if you're looking to increase your transfer fee, and now has gone for 20 million. So it's what, 16-17 million pound profit.
I mean, staggering. This one is staggering. Just before we go to the next ads, this one is unbelievable, because I reckon if you asked the general football fan, the general Premier League fan, Dodi Lukebakio, who is he? They'd have no idea that he was at Watford.
No.
And to go for £20 million, having hardly played for the club, is unbelievable business.
Yeah, he played, I think it was 15 minutes against West Ham in the 17-18 season. And that was it. You know, he came as almost in the same bracket as Keane, young, needing game time. Obviously didn't set the world alight. And then I think we actually had a friendly, a pre-season friendly against Fortuna Dusseldorf. And then the next day he signed on loan for that club. So they must have been like, look, is this guy going to play? If not, we'll take him. He's had, in fairness, a very, very good season. And, you know, 17 million profit on a player that's played 15 minutes for your club. That's exceptional business from the Pozzos.
Incredible business, absolutely. And of course, today, that bid coming in from Everton for Abdoulou Doucouré, around 32 million. Dodi Lukebakio going to Hertha Berlin for 20 million. Will be Lukebakio after this.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through until 8 p.m. this evening on the Watford Fan Show with Andy Lewis from the Hornets Nest. Right, next up, I'm excited about this. We have got Colin Payne on the line, editor of the Watford Treasury, which is a visual history of Watford. And I looked through this earlier on digital version. It looks absolutely brilliant. Some great retrospective articles in there mixed with some really good current stuff. One bit on Aurelio Gomez, for example. Absolutely fantastic stuff. Colin, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
No, not a problem. As I was saying just then, Andy kind of flicked me through some of the articles that are in this magazine, this booklet. For anybody that hasn't seen it, do you want to just give us a rundown of exactly what it entails?
Sure. Basically, it's a look back at sort of Watford's history. And we got quite conscious, actually, in the first three issues that, yeah, it's a look back at the history. But anyone reading it would think we were sort of archetypal third division club. So issue four, we've brought it sort of bang up to date. There's features, it does range. Obviously, there's the old stuff. We cover the opening of Vicarage Road in 1922. We cover a game at Reading in the 50s where we got heavily beat, interview lots of old players. But also, it does bring it up to date. As you said, there's the Aurelio Gomez feature. There's a feature on Elman Abdi. There's one on Sanchez Flores. And we speak to Roya, the 1881 as well. There's a nice, colourful feature on them as well. So it sort of covers all eras. But what it is, basically, I used to describe it as a history magazine, but I think it's more an appreciation of what's special about Watford.
Yeah, hi there, Colin. Andy here.
Hello, Andy.
It's fantastic. I've got it open on my laptop in front of me. I've just been flicking through in the ad breaks. Just looking at what I love is the fantastic photographs that you're able to get and the memorabilia that you're able to scan in. And I've currently got open the article, the interview with Nigel Gibbs. Now I thought that I was bad at hoarding any sort of Watford memorabilia that I have. Nigel, however, seems to have kept absolutely everything from his 20-year career with Watford, hasn't he?
He has, and it is interesting. It makes you realise the stuff you've let slip through your fingers yourself, actually. But looking at Nigel's stuff, he's managed Ollie, who does Hornet Heaven podcast. He went round and met Nigel around his house and sort of, he said it was like sort of going into, the programme Lloyd Grossman used to do. I forget the name of it. Through the Keyhole. Yeah, sort of going into the house and there's sort of Watford and football memorabilia everywhere. And it's interesting to look, there's things like we feature Nigel's first payslip he produced. And for anyone that hasn't seen it, it was £40 a week. But he's kept hold of that. Invitations to Outland's garden parties that he used to have. Sort of photographs of a trip to China. Empty champagne bottle. He's literally kept hold of everything. And it's them non-obvious things that are the special stuff over the years because no one else has got them.
It's unbelievable, Colin. I mean, on one hand, you could suggest it's a slight case of hoarding. On the other hand, it is the essence of what we used to know footballers to be, isn't it? I mean, you can't really imagine. Yeah. I don't want to do modern footballers a disservice here, but you can't imagine them holding on to their first payslip, although they probably have it digitally, to be fair. But those little bits, like you said, the champagne bottle, the first football from the first game he played, like the shirts. I know that footballers do keep shirts, but those little bits of memorabilia, you just don't think that modern players would keep them anymore.
No, and it is. And there's one thing here. It's like you've got to think he was sort of a teenager when he made his debut for Watford. He played Sparta Prague. I think it was his first game. It may have been his second. But he's come back with, like, all this memorabilia from the trip, including the cup and saucer, which for a teenager to come back with something like that and keep it is quite amazing. It just says the sort of, I don't know, he says in the interview he was just sort of pleased to be playing. It's still do it all for one game, and it proves it, really, just the enthusiasm he's got and the way he's kept stuff. It's amazing.
I think what I love about Nigel, my favourite bit from his, is he's managed to get his hands on the team sheet from the one and only time that we won at Anfield back in 1999. And he confesses he didn't actually make the squad that day. He didn't even play.
No.
It just sums up, not only was he a Watford player, a Watford legend. He was a Watford supporter. And that would be something incredible for a Watford fan to get their hands on even nowadays as well, from that famous 1-0 win. But Colin, I'm going to put you on the spot here. You know, you and I both like collecting sort of football memorabilia and amalgamating it through the years. If you could submit, if Ollie Wicken came around your house to interview you for your 10 bits of Watford memorabilia, what would be your top bit of Watford memorabilia that you've gathered throughout the years?
Oh, that is putting me on the spot. Well, one of the things I prize most, and I think it's more a sort of badge of honour, is my original supporters club membership card from 1978. It's got a picture of like a young 15-year-old or 14-year-old denim-clad Colin, all sort of hair unkempt and that, and for my travel club card, because it went so many places with me. It was my ticket to a new world, that was at the time, going on football specials and coaches, and the season it was for that I first joined the supporters club was the season we went up from the third division. So it sounds an odd one, because I've got literally thousands of programmes and various other bits of memorabilia. But for me, that's the most personal thing.
Yeah, fantastic. Colin, just finally, how can fans get hold of this and the other three copies that you've done beforehand as well?
Yeah, I'd highly recommend they get hold of all four. Yep, that's a good point. But they can get hold of it either. We'll be selling before the game at Brighton along Vicarage Road. Look out, we'll have a stall set up and a banner along Vicarage Road by the cemetery wall. Or they can buy it from the Hornet Shop, Watford Museum, or mail order through the watfordtreasury.co.uk. Nice, simple email address there. And we'd be happy to pop one in the post for them.
Colin, that's great. Thanks very much for joining us
today. Thank you for speaking to me. Cheers.
Not a problem. That was Colin Payne, editor of the Watford Treasury, a visual history of Watford. And you heard where you can get it there. Be sure to go out and get it because it's absolutely brilliant. Any bits of memorabilia that you've kept over the years,
mate? I went pretty crazy for the FA Cup final stuff. But I think for me, I keep every single ticket that I go to for every single game, not just Watford games, but any ticket to any sporting or music event. I like just looking back at tickets, and I don't know why, but I think for me it's got to be my first Watford game against Newcastle United back in 1999. I have that pinned on my wall, and you know, looking at that, you just sort of look back and think that was 20 years ago. You know, I've supported this club all this time now, and that was my first ever bit of Watford memorabilia, so that would be mine.
Scorers?
1-1. Don't ask me scorers. I only went to watch Alan Shearer and he didn't score. So I don't know who the scorers were without looking it up.
Amazing. It's funny, isn't it? Because we do collect these items over the course of watching football, and I've got hordes and hordes of programmes at home, just in boxes, not doing anything with them. And I remember I always used to think, do you know what? One day they're gonna be really like valuable. Yeah. People are going to want them. Those old figures, those like Tonka sports figures and those Corinthian sports figures, and you think, I'm going to keep all them because they're going to be worth thousands. They're not. They're absolutely, you can get them on eBay for like a couple of quid. They're not valuable at all.
But that's the thing with programmes. Like I'll always get a programme when we go to the games, and especially away games, you know, I'll read the maybe 5 pages that are about my team and then just won't read anything else. And then it'll sit there in a box just gathering dust, and I know I should throw them out. I know I should get rid of them, but I don't want to. Like they're part of like my Watford supporting history. It's sort of like you've got an attachment to them.
Yeah,
it's difficult, isn't it?
No, you're absolutely right. There is that notion of kind of ripping off the plaster and just after every game, just getting rid of it, because you'll never think about it again, and you won't think, oh, that program from that game in January 2003. I wish I'd kept that. You won't think about it at all. However, like Nigel Gibbs has done, it would be lovely to have a space in your own house where you can, you know, decorate a wall with all your memorabilia and actually celebrate it. Like you said, with your tickets, if you can create some sort of collage of them, it'd be brilliant to have on your wall. But yeah, maybe one day, mate, when the big house comes.
When I own a house and I'm not paying rent in London, yeah.
There we go. Okay, after this, we are looking ahead to the weekend's action and getting the Brighton preview.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio. The Opposition View on Love Sport.
Yep, it is the Opposition View. That thing can only mean one thing. Of course, Watford faced Brighton in the first match day of the Premier League season. Delighted to say we've got Eddie from the Albion Raw podcast on the line. Eddie, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
So, are we looking...
Just off of the beach. It's It's a lovely day down here.
Oh, lovely stuff. Are we looking forward to the weekend?
Yes, I think we can do now. Obviously, it's the first day of the season. There's always that massive pre-season excitement that you get, and you know who you're signing, who's leaving the club, and the ifs, buts, and why fors, and the tactical changes. Now, obviously, with us, a new manager, only two new players so far. Although I think one's about to be announced. Another one's going to be announced tonight, I think. It's exciting. A duplicate of last year's first day of the season as well at Watford, and that didn't go so well for us. In fact, it was probably one of our worst performances of the season. So all that pre-season optimism went straight out the window within about half an hour, really.
Well, if you could do the same again, AD, that would be great, please.
No, not going to happen.
tell us about that pre-season, because like you mentioned, you got a new manager at the helm. I think we were, I don't know, from an outsider's point of view, I was maybe a little bit sad for Chris Hughton when he left. How's the pre-season gone under your new manager? Any sort of major tactical changes that you've seen?
Yeah, there's been a few. Basically, the forward players have been given some instruction, which they probably weren't being given before. It was more towards the end of the season. A lot of them got disenfranchised with the whole thing, and everything was all about defensive shape and then not much of a plan going forward. Are we feeling sorry for Chris? Yes, of course we are. Was it the right decision? Yes, it probably was, actually. The first half of the season up to January, we looked, up to New Year's Day, in fact, we were looking okay. We had, I think it was 26 points going into the turn of the year. And, winning games, not necessarily looking that exciting, to be honest with you. We were getting points on the board. And then all of a sudden, the away game at West Ham on New Year's Day, which we were 2-0 up and cruising and ended up being pegged back to 2-2. And then a couple of days later, away at Fulham, again, 2-0 up and cruising and ended up losing 4-2. There were things, the doubt started to creep in with the players a little bit, I think. And we ended up with 36 points from looking upwards and trying to get our best ever league placing going into the new year. We hung on by the skin of our teeth, and 36 points is usually enough to keep you in the division. So, and those performances from then on, losing 5-0 at home to Bournemouth and losing at home to Cardiff in games where you're looking to hopefully the ones where you need to get the points. The writing was on the wall really a little bit if you look at it dispassionately. I mean, Chris is. Got this reputation of being the nicest man in football, and having met him on several occasions, he is a truly, truly wonderful fella. But now we've taken a risk. We've got Dan Ashworth at the club now, who, as you probably know, was he put the blueprint in place for the current England setup. So from Gareth Southgate down, he put everything in place for the under 18 World Cup winners, under 20 winners, and he's earmarked Graham Potter as one that for the future, and he talks a good game. He's very, very, very intelligent. He's got a couple of degrees in human intelligence and things like that, and he's got a very good team in place, and we've been impressed with him so far. Obviously, it's a results game. There has been a change in formation. Looks like we're going to go into the season playing three at the back. Just broken our transfer record to bring in Adam Webster from Bristol City. That doesn't mean Lewis Dunk's going. Lewis, we very much expect to be leading the team out at Vicarage Road on Saturday.
Are you sure, AD? Are you sure, mate?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure.
So the fact that Harry Maguire's move is imminent to Man United, and there's a gaping hole in that back line for Leicester City, and we know they're interested in Dunk.
I mean, Leicester spent big money on a couple of defenders last summer. Brendan Rodgers thinks that they're going to be good enough to make the step up. If they are going to look to spend some money, I think Tarkowski is ahead of Dunk on the shopping list. Is Tarkowski a better player than Lewis Dunk? Not even close. Not even the same postcode. Tarkowski is an absolute... Oh, my God, he's rubbish. How has that guy ever got even close to the England team? It's a liability. So, yes, we do hope that Tarkowski goes to Leicester and weakens them.
OK, nice opinion there, Aidy. Now, just to quickly touch on Graham Potter again before we get into our next bit. You said that, you know, he's embedded himself well. We saw the impact he had with Ostersunds and this sort of new age of management in terms of getting the players to paint, getting the players to do ballet, getting the players to perform in front of each other, to sort of come together. Do you think that's going to translate to the Premier League?
And the modern player, as it were. If you're saying that Shane Duffy is going to be appearing in Swan Lake soon, then no. But I mean, I think, yeah, no, it's basically here. Got like I mentioned earlier, he's got these degrees and how to get in man management, and you know he's taken the scenic route to get where he is now, and he does it mostly by coaching and making players better and by making them believe in themselves and getting the best out of them in whichever way that is. Now the whole ballet thing and the public performance thing, it was all about taking the players outside of their comfort zone and making them excel in that particular arena. Not necessarily be the best singers or ballet dancers or actors or whatever it is they were doing, but it gives them an opportunity to do add another string to the bow. And I think it's a good approach. I think it's a new approach. But yeah, I mean, I think all the theatres in Brighton are booked for Panto this year, so he might have to wait a bit.
Well, one player who should be used to prance around and fall into the floor in style is Anthony Knockhart. But he's not a Brighton player anymore, is he? From the outside looking in, that seemed like
a strange move. Technically, he is. it was a very strange deal that saw him go to Fulham, but he is actually technically only on loan to Fulham. So he is still a Brighton Hove Albion player. Now, yeah, I was surprised to see him go. We have signed Leandro Trossard, who captained Genk to the Belgian Jupiler League title last year. And from what we've seen, he is very, very similar to Anthony, but possibly a better and with more end product. I mean, Anthony was absolutely, he's a wonderful player. He's box office. And he will absolutely, I mean, we saw from the showreel that I mean, obviously Fulham lost yesterday, and he came on from the bench. But when he did come on the pitch, he made things happen, and he will absolutely tear that division up. But his decision making and his end product sometimes left a lot to be desired. He tried to take on the same player one time too many on a regular basis, and you know, I mean, he did end up with more assists than any other player last year. So I mean, that is something we have to worry about. Well, we've got other players in that team, and
Aidy, we're going to have to let you go, mate. Just quickly before you go, quick score prediction.
If BT Sports to be believed with their data analysis thing, we're going to win 4-0. I don't think it is going to be quite that thing. I'd like to think we're going to get a decent result. I think that I will take a 2-0 win, which will reverse that absolute horrible result from last season.
Nice one. Aidy, thank you very much for joining us. That was Aidy from the Albion Raw podcast. He reckons 2-0, Andy. Your one?
I reckon a 3-1 to the Orns on the opening day.
3-1.
3-1.
Wow, he's putting it right out there. Now, just to quickly finish up, your first game, Watford 1, Newcastle 1, was indeed a 1-1 draw. Michael Ngonge.
Ngonge,
and got a Michel Ngonge?
Yeah, Michel
Ngonge. Yeah, Ngonge scored 53rd minute. Nikos Dabizas.
Dabizas, that was it.
59th minute. That was the Watford Fan Show back after pre-season. Next season, we'll be giving you all the reaction from that first game of the season against Brighton.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.